looking downfield. He's got a receiver, and it is caught. Jimmy Smith at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown, Jacksonville. Play action, Brunell. Deep drop, pressure coming. Turns and Clancy's looking for Jimmy Smith down the sideline. Smith gets behind the coverage, makes the catch. Touchdown, Jacksonville. Play clock runs down. Snap drop back here. Comes to Blitz. Brunell turns and hands the ball, and he's looking for Jimmy Smith, and it is caught. Jimmy Smith's got it. He's on the run inside the 10. 5, touchdown, Jimmy Smith. His third of the football game, 40 yards, and he's got 287 yards receiving.
Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host, Mike Dempsey.
Hey, welcome in everybody. Mike Dempsey here with you back in the saddle after a day off, last foreseeable day off. Until I don't know when. January, maybe, and that's okay. Because you know what? The way I described it to Tyler earlier today, we've been on vacation for 6 months. We're ready to hit the ground and get it going with you, talking Jaguar football on a Tuesday, brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com, our Tuesday sponsor. Fat Tony, once again, in the trainer's room this morning. And we may hear from Fat Tony later, a little bit later on in the show, but did a terrific job yesterday with John Osier. Appreciate those guys carrying the water while I was out, and had a conversation with Gus Bradley to lead off the show yesterday, which if you missed, you can hear coming up a little bit later on this morning, as it was the most extensive talk Gus had yesterday, I would imagine, due to the cancellation of practice, I guess, in a couple of ways. The disappointment, I'm sure, for a lot of Jaguar fans out there that are trying to get out to Mandarin last night and watch practice. I know we had the Frangie show out there yesterday afternoon, and the weather not cooperating. Jag sent all the equipment out there and try to get everything set up, but never let the buses loose with the players until they were sure they're going to be able to get the practice in. That call never came, so they hustle the equipment back over as best they can. It's a process, man. It's the logistics of the travel in the NFL. This is just one practice, and it's, you know, just across town is all it is. Imagine the organizations that pick up and move everything. The Jags did it way back in their past, up at Stevens Point, Wisconsin. But it is a logistical haul to make all that come together. But they got all the stuff back over here, tried to get things underway around 7 o'clock last night, and ultimately some lightning in the area doomed them from getting in at practice. And, well, I tell you, you know, training camp just isn't what it used to be. We've heard that now for a number of years, but you have a limited number of these before the preseason gets here. And I understand the first few weeks of the preseason, it's not so much that you can't continue with your install because you're not game planning for the Pittsburgh Steelers in the first preseason game. You're not worried about the outcome of the game. You're worried about working on what you want to work on and make sure that your timing is there and you get to go up against some competition that doesn't know what's coming on either side of the football. But you know, precious few practices. They don't have two-a-days anymore. Just a couple of weeks of training camp, and every practice counts, you know. So they missed some time out on the field yesterday. Nothing you can't make up at this stage, but you don't want to see too many more of those. That's probably why it's been a good call for the Jags to practice at 9:55 every morning, which they will do, weather permitting, for the next 3 days. And we hope to see some of you out there, certainly in the listening audience. Jaguars Today will be broadcasting at the Florida Blue practice fields. I was out there as I was talking with Hick. I was out there Friday, but, you know, we can see a limited amount while we're on the air. I heard some oohs and ahs, some big catches. Aurelius Ben made some nice plays. Mercedes Lewis had a nice practice. But nice to go out there when you can just eyeball it yourself and not worry about anything else, but focusing in on what you want to focus in on. And that's the problem, is what Dan Hicken brought up, is you focus on one thing. There are three other things going on in different portions of the practice field. And you wonder sometimes. People say, wow, so-and-so had a great practice or a great highlight or this or the other thing. And unless they're in team, when everyone is watching the same thing, a lot of times you miss out on that stuff. That's just the nature of the beast. That's why they have a lot of coaches with a lot of eyeballs, and they're filming everything that goes on out there. News coming out yesterday, of course. This is the most non-unexpected news, I guess, the most expected news, to just cancel out the double negative. Did anyone think there wasn't more to it when A. Sanders was released 2 weeks prior to training camp and the Jags didn't immediately go out and sign somebody to fill his roster spot? It took about a week to bring in. I think it was Greg Jenkins ultimately took that spot coming in from the Oakland Raiders, formerly of the Oakland Raiders, to compete at wide receiver and as a return guy. By the way, caught a terrific ball down the seam on Sunday. Really the only highlight I've seen that he stood out in, but it was a very nice hands catch. Kind of snatched it right in front of a defender, and defender tried to cut in front of him, and had that been a game, might have taken that one the distance for a long touchdown. But regardless, Ace Sanders, news coming out yesterday, another failed drug test, now a 10-game suspension looming. Again, NFL teams, the coaching staffs, the front offices, general managers, they do not like a vacuum. The vacuum needs to be filled. If there's an empty roster spot, let's go pluck somebody that we have our eye on, because I guarantee you there are guys out there that they always monitor and say, let's bring this guy in, let's get a closer look. Well, we can't right now. We're at 90. And you'll see the roster churn a little bit during training camp, and then obviously, you know, cut down time will come, but we may not think it's a big deal, basically the 90th guy on the roster, but for them, just getting another look for a few more weeks and another body is a good thing. So the Jags obviously didn't have an immediate plan to replace Ace Sanders at the time. A lot of times that's what you'll see in those dead periods. As everyone was away in July, if a guy gets cut at that time, they'll announce the signing of a guy within 24 hours because that was the intention. We let this guy go, wish him the best. We're clearing space for a guy we think has a better chance to help us. But when Ace Sanders, who is working on a third-round rookie contract, okay, he's not getting rich. By NFL standards, he's extremely cheap. Guy who caught, 51 balls as a rookie here. Has the ability to return punts, although not the knack. We hadn't shown a knack for explosive plays, certainly, in that department. But a guy like that, young guy, doesn't get picked up by anybody. That's a sign that probably the word is out. And he obviously last year had the 4-game suspension. We knew the next one was going to be 10. The next one after that, if there was to be another one, would be a season-long suspension for Ace Sanders. So nobody's going to touch Ace for the first 3 months of the season until that 10-game suspension is behind him, which does continue to toll. It will count even if he is not on a roster. Those 10 games will go by. The first 10 weeks of the NFL season, I suppose, would go by, and then he would be eligible to sign and play somewhere. So you kind of knew it. Maybe not you didn't know it, but you kind of suspected that would be the case. And frankly, I didn't know it. And we never would come right out and until you have evidence of that, make that claim. But it would have surprised me greatly had there not been that coming out eventually that Ace Sanders was facing another suspension. Here's what Gus Bradley had to say, as a matter of fact, last night about the situation involving Ace.
The way I understand it, all the league matters like that are pretty confidential. You know, I can just comment. You know, like I said before, it was more of a situation we had to make a decision with our head than our heart. It's tough. You know, Ace was, you know, very important and did some good things for us. So, you know, we wish him the best.
Hey, I don't doubt that Gus Bradley does wish him the best. But at a certain point, you know, he's like, hey, Gus is as big a heart as anybody you'll meet in the business. But come on, you know, burn me once. We took a chance on you. And that is burning a coach when you draft a guy in round three and in his second year, he's getting suspended for 4 games. Really hasn't made an impact. And, you know, as of right now, a bust of a draft pick for the Jacksonville Jaguars. But, you know what? Those occur as well. Today, we're not going to talk about busts. We're going to talk about guys ascending. You know, last year, Cedric Marks was the best player on this football team. Clearly, the defensive MVP, to me, clearly the team MVP as well. But today, anticipating probably a slow start for Cedric Marks. He says he'll be ready for week one, although won't see him on the field in the preseason. Who will be the defensive MVP of the Jaguars in 2015? I'm going to say it won't be Cedric Marks, so cast your vote today by tweeting us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Tyler, and also by weighing in on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. A phone number today, same as always, 641-1010. That doubles as the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. You can share your thoughts either on the question of the day or anything related to the Jags in that avenue. Question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. J.P. Shadrick was out of practice all weekend long. He's going to join me here as we're getting ready to roll on all kinds of Jaguar programming coming up over the course of the next few weeks. So stick around for that. He'll be in with me next talking Jaguar football. We'll take your calls at 641-1010, and you'll hear from Gus Bradley coming up a little bit later on the program. Who will be the defensive MVP for the Jacksonville Jaguars this year? Cast your votes in a variety of manners. Mike Dempsey here with you. Tyler Devitt back at 1010XL World Headquarters. Jaguars Today on a Tuesday, brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com, here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
You know, try to beat the weather, try to get it in. Went right into more individual group work with special teams, and we didn't get into any team run or team pass, so not much situation. We'll have to catch up with it, probably readjust our scheduling and our install from here on out.
Gus Bradley, got to readjust, got to install, got to get back out there. Day off, though. Welcome to the Metro Diner Chat Counter, J.P. Shatter.
Oh, it's great to be here
at
the Metro
like
Diner Chat Counter. Love it.
I wish I had it catered by the Metro
Diner.
Smells
great here.
Does it?
Yeah.
Fortunato ate all the good stuff. It's all gone.
Man, I'm late.
That's how he is, though. You know Fortunato, man. Usually, all season, he rolls in here about the crack of 1 p.m. And then he sneaks in here early during the season, hunting for food, and leaves nothing for anybody else.
You know what I like on the Metro Diner Chat Counter?
What do you like?
The American omelet.
There you go.
That's fantastic.
Can't go wrong.
No.
Metro Diner loving us right now. How are you? Everything good?
Oh, yeah. Great. Off day for the players. So a little lighter day for .com and such. It's not a practice. You don't have to cover practice and such. So some, I know Patrick Cavanaugh and Dave DeCandis are doing some other projects for TV a little later today, getting that knocked out. Osher's got some big stuff coming this afternoon. A little tease there, so get ready
for
that.
You're such a well-put-together team guy right here.
There's a new Shadrick sighting right now on the website.
There
is. Came out this morning.
Saw it.
So check that out. So, yeah, just getting ready for another few days of practice.
Just taking the whole thing. And, of course, last night, disappointment for the fans, obviously. You know,
yeah,
different venue.
Yeah, that was a bummer, man.
You get it. You know, last year was a lot of fun out of Bartram. You know, this year I wasn't able to make it out, so maybe that's why they ultimately decided, well,
it's all about you.
Not
Mike.
That big a deal.
I don't know if you heard.
As well, far as that goes.
You,
oh, I've heard.
It's all about you.
I don't know,
just
no,
ask
I don't
it.
Know if you've heard.
No, I'm kidding.
Being next, in the next office, you probably hear everything.
We were standing there last night on the field, and we're on about the 30 or 40 yard line, and they're walking around, looking at the field, just seeing the conditions. It's, you know, raining and raining a little harder, and we're standing there, have an umbrella. All of a sudden, flash, kaboom, like a quarter mile away from the stadium.
Right.
And we all scatter off the field. Lightning concerns, field drainage and footing a concern. Certainly you don't want anything to happen for the Jags players on a neutral site like that, different site.
So, any site, for that matter.
So they held the team here until they finally made the decision. Hey, do we make this a walkthrough down there? Is that worth it? What's the deal? They decided to just say, forget the whole thing. It's raining even harder now. Let's just do a practice here downtown. And that's what they decided to do until that practice was rain shortened and lightning shortened as well. I think they got like 45 minutes
right
in, and that was about it last night. So,
is there a window, like once you see lightning in the area, right? Like as a guy who coaches youth soccer, right? You see lightning. When the last strike of lightning, you have to wait at least 30 minutes before you can take the field again. Is there something like that in the NFL where if there's...
I want to say it's 30 minutes.
It would seem like there
that
would be,
sounds
right?
Like a normal, like, for all
just
sports.
Just a reasonable kind of precaution to take. So at that point, when it's already lightning strikes out in the Mandarin area, you're not going to bus them all the way across town.
I know this is shocking to you, Mike. I don't get spooked a lot. But one thing that spooks me is lightning.
Is it?
I
is that
do
right?
not like lightning. I'm not a lightning guy. I don't like being outside and like lightning at all.
Really? My dad used to love, when I was a kid, if there was a really good lightning storm, like there are ever
it.
Any of those in Florida, he would go out in the garage, open the garage door, and just stand there and watch the rain come down and the lightning strike. Big fan of that. Not JP.
I don't like being in the house. I'll just lay on the couch. I don't like it.
As far away from your electronics as possible. Maybe get in the tub. although lightning and water probably don't mix so well. I don't know.
Turn on the shower. Go ahead. Great.
Your
go
life
ahead,
is yeah. over, JP. The Jags have been out there for three full practices, though. And
yes.
It's difficult. Dan Hick and I were talking about this, picking out guys who stand out. I think we're still in the stage until they're in full pads where it's natural that the pass catchers, the defensive backs, the quarterbacks are the guys who are going to stand out because, you know, it's tough for a running back to really give you a full look at what he's capable of doing. He's not allowed to break tackles. They're not tackles to break. Same with the defensive players. You see them. Are they in position? Would the guy make a move on them? So with those restrictions, have there been a handful of guys that have caught your eye?
Yes, but that restriction was lifted a bit on Sunday when they actually had shoulder pads on for the first time. So the 9-on-7 period of Sunday was pretty darn cool to see. Straight running drills and pads popping and words going both ways. And it was very intense for the first time, which was really good to see. That's where a guy like Toby Gerhart shines.
Yes.
In this type of an offense now, with that blocking scheme and between the tackles, that's his game. And there was a moment in that 9-on-7 where Toby broke through the line, didn't get touched, found the hole, and then Telvin Smith decided to come on and take him. That didn't end well for Telvin Smith.
Right.
With Toby Gerhart a full head of steam, shoulder down, he ran right through Telvin. Telvin didn't have a chance. So I
that's
like
not
that.
The best matchup for Telvin Smith.
No.
Not many backs bigger than Toby Gerhart in the NFL.
That's right. Go, full head of steam, going through the line. And that's good for Toby Gerhart. He feels like this is the type of attack that he can perform in, especially in that type of situation between the tackles. Last year they're running sweeps and all this kind of stuff with him. That's not his game. Straight ahead, downhill type of offense, run game. Toby Gerhart, I like what I've seen from him, at least on Sunday in the one padded practice that we get to see. And I'll look forward to a lot of that coming up. I don't know, other guys, you see Yeldon, his shiftiness and his ability to
right, that's
cut.
We think we're seeing something, but we're not 100% sure yet.
Right, you really want to see starting Wednesday if he can break free from true, like, you know, air quotes here, tackles. They're not going to take guys to the ground. That's not going to happen.
Oh, yeah, you see them yelling that too, right? It's funny because guys come in there, and I don't care if it is contact or non-contact, JP. You're running at full speed.
Sure.
All those big guys in a certain amount of area, guys are going to the ground, and they're trying to be very careful about not unnecessarily getting a guy injured. I mean, you know, on a situation it can be avoided, but you got to get these running backs. Maurice Jones-Drew told me a few years ago when they were really trying to get, I think it was trying to get Blaine Gabbert going, okay? And they spent so much time in the preseason focusing on the passing game and getting the timing down and really trying to get him off to a good start, that he felt like the running game suffered early in the season because they didn't devote enough time to it. And you wonder about that. You know, you think the passing game is a lot more intricate with the timing and all the things that have to go into it. You have to be at this spot at a certain time. I have to release the ball before you break. We're running. There's a great element of it that's just instinct for these guys, but you know, they tell you that they need that. They need to see how they fit with their offensive line, be able to read the tendencies of the offensive line. So when you think you see them doing something, you're pretty confident that you know what they're actually trying to accomplish, and therefore you can make the appropriate cut.
It's interesting in this offense, isn't it? There's an emphasis on running the ball, right?
Gus talked about that Sunday.
But there's no fullback. They're doing it with tight ends only, and that's going to be the interesting thing. Yes, Julius Thomas was brought in as a receiving tight end, but Sunday he got his nose in there on blocking drills too.
He did.
He wants to expand his game, they say. He says, what do you think about that?
Well,
he's still a receiving tight end first.
Sure he is, but it's like Jimmy Graham said. Jimmy Graham said, I'm blocking 75% of the time up in Seattle. That's part of the football. You can't line a guy up at tight end and not have him ever block anybody.
That's right.
You know what
that's,
I mean?
He's a tight end for a
right.
reason.
He has, so if he's in there, otherwise the defense can just abuse that situation. Ultimately, good defensive coordinators will take advantage of that. But I think what you're seeing is when you're going to see some two tight end sets, you're going to see Mercedes Lewis as your sixth offensive lineman, that cliche, because they are really splitting Julius Thomas out wide.
Sure.
I mean, he was out wide on
Sunday. Well, he can go anywhere.
Anywhere, right.
Anywhere.
So the tight end is almost a designation in name only with him, right? He's kind of like a hybrid offensive weapon. Certainly he'll line up tight to the formation sometimes, and he will be in there, I'm sure, on some running plays. But you don't want it to be that obvious. I mean, that's the thing. In three wide receiver sets, if he's the tight end, you don't want to tip one way or the other that anytime Julius Thomas is on the field, Mercedes Lewis isn't, they're not going to run the football.
That's right.
So he's got to be able to do those kind
and
of things.
And if you're going to be a tight end on this team, Clay Harbor on down the line, you got to block too. If you're gonna put that much into the running game for this team, you're gonna have to be able to block somehow. So
you
start now.
You gotta score points in this league though, right? I mean,
that's
and you can't, you're just not gonna grind out 14-10 victories every single week. So you're going to have an explosive element if you're going to be an upper echelon team. But, you know, Gus talked about this Sunday after practice in his post-practice press conference, just saying we want to use this not only to, you know, move the ball down the field, but we want to take pressure off Blake. We want to limit turnovers with our running game. I don't, you know, there's got to be an element of not thinking about that, though, once you go to a game as a quarterback, right? You don't want that in the back of your mind. That's one thing for the coaching staff to let's plan it this way and let's limit turnovers because we're running these plays. But you don't want Blake thinking about, man, there's a number of interceptions, and if I'm at eight picks after so-and-so games, you know, I'm going to have to dial this back. You can't have him thinking like that.
I got an idea that Blake's not going to give a damn about
Well, I hope that's
number,
the case.
You know?
I hope that's the case.
That's his just the little time we get with him. I don't think that's in his. It's not going to be in his head. I don't think.
Right.
He's going to be He's going to take chances. He's going to throw interceptions. He knows that. He's going to throw touchdowns. He knows that too. And whatever happens, happens. I don't think that's going to get into his mindset. I think this year. Now, some other guys that we talk about this week. A guy like Marquise Lee, back on the field finally, missed the last. OTA periods and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So didn't do any of the on-field work in the off-season program, but back and clear to practice 100%. You've seen him get deep on guys, and that's what you want. You want the guy that can take the back end off the defense and get over the top. Now, he's dropped a few balls here or there. He's told us, of course, that's the last thing that Jerry Sullivan teaches. Run the right route, get open, do things right, and then learn to catch the ball last. Okay, well, maybe that's going to come.
That part up along the way somewhere, right?
At some point,
when
it'll
come. The Biletnikoff Award winner, you might have had to catch the ball.
You know. But then yesterday he had the day. Sunday he had the day off. And
was it Sunday?
No, it was yesterday.
Yeah,
it was yesterday.
Because Sunday he had that drop in the end zone.
So it was yesterday.
Yes.
And Gus Bradley said last night in his press conference, hey, "What's up with Lee? Was it just a day off?" No, the GPS numbers said he had worked a little too much, so we held him back today. So going to the and that blew up last night as a big story that the GPS numbers, the analytics, and all that. Maybe they had worked him a little bit hard, and knowing his past with injuries and such, they pulled him off at least for a day to see what happens. And that's something you haven't. A lot of teams use that. I think the company that does the GPS for the Jags put out a tweet last night. I think there's 18 teams in the league that use the same system.
Right.
So it's not foreign. Everybody's using, a lot of these teams are using it. But that factored into the decision to keep Lee off the field.
You know, some people look at that or listen to that and scoff and say, oh boy, you know, we're really coddling these guys. There's no team that uses more advanced training techniques like that than the Philadelphia Eagles. They've been the healthiest team in the National Football League for the last 2 years. Now, some of that could be coincidental, but they're really taking an outside the box approach. You're like, let's forget convention. Let's think about this in a different way. So, hey, look, just keep Marquise Lee healthy for the start of the season. Whatever it takes, if that means every fourth day he misses a practice, I think we're all okay with that.
I asked Marquise last night, you know, what did you think about when they told you about the GPS? He's like, you should have seen my face when they told me that, because he wants to play. You know, that's the players want to be on the field.
Sure.
And he's like, GPS numbers? He doesn't think about that.
Right.
He's not going to argue it either. It's just, all right, take the day off and be ready to roll on Wednesday.
All right, question of the day today. We're asking listeners, who will be the MVP of the defense this year? Clearly, Sendarek Marks was that guy last year. You'd expect him to get off to a slower start due to the ACL recovery. So for you, if you remove Sendarek from the equation, or if you don't, who do you think is the most likely candidate to win MVP honors on the defensive
side? This is a tough one. There's a lot of candidates this year.
There are.
You could go a number of different ways. You could go somebody on that D-line. You could go somebody at linebacker. You could go even somebody in the secondary.
You go
there's
in any
three,
any position
there's three layers of the defense.
There are.
Mike. I don't know if you heard about
candidates.
This. There's 11 players on defense.
Is this a stall or are you just educating me now?
No, I'm tossed up on this one. I'm trying to figure out if I want to.
Give me the candidates that you're tossing about in your mind.
Telvin Smith, Aaron Colvin.
Honestly, the first two guys I thought of.
Everybody's thinking of those
right?
two, right?
Certainly everybody's thinking Telvin Smith because of the playmaking element. We saw the deflected ball. You hate to say a guy just has a nose for the football. It sounds so cliche, but he seems to, right?
Yeah.
I mean, ball's in the air on a tip drill. Talvin Smith finds his way to the football.
But in, I think Colvin has a really good chance because there's, he could start outside and move inside on certain passing situations as the nickel corner. He's going to be on the field all the time in different places, matched up on guys. And you know his competitive spirit. I mean, he's going to be around the ball all the time too. And that secondary is making an emphasis on catching balls this year and intercepting the ball. And they didn't do that last year. So Colvin is one of the most outspoken on that. They want to get that done. And if he wants to get something done, you know from his past, he's probably going to get it done. So it's a toss-up between those two for me. I think Talvin has the opportunity closer to the line of scrimmage to make those impact plays, even in the run game and such, you know, maybe force some fumbles here or there, a blitz here or there, strip sack fumble, that type of thing. So because of that, I think I'll give Talvin the edge.
Yeah, he's got the sexy big plays, the splash plays.
That's right.
You figure he'd fill up some of those columns. All right, J.P. Shadrick, tell me what you got coming up next, either on the radio or on .com.
Oh, I don't know. What's happening today? Well, lunch is coming up, so that'll be at like noon.
It's taking and then, very literally right now.
No, we've got what is today? Tuesday?
Today's Tuesday.
Today
yes,
is
it is.
See, that's the thing with camp. The days
kind of blend together. Right?
There's the same day.
There's no off days.
So today's Tuesday. We'll have a .com live later this week. Not sure which day. And then Thursday night is Jaguars Radio again.
Thursday.
Gus Bradley show on Jaguars Radio 6 to 7 on the Jaguars Radio Network. Lagerman and the coach. We're right on after that for an hour. Me and Lagerman and Baselli with Jaguars Thursday. And then we will run the scrimmage live. We will show it live on Jaguars.com. If you can't make it out Saturday,
love it.
We'll have it live exclusively on Jaguars.com. So
beautiful.
That's coming up.
Less than 6 weeks till they kick off. For real.
Right? Wow.
6 weeks from yesterday.
How about a week from Friday is the first preseason?
Isn't that nuts?
Game?
I know.
The Steelers are coming in.
After all that downtime, camp gets here and it's like poof, almost half gone.
Yeah.
Right? And then on you go. And hey, you know what? Get through this portion, get the install in, learn the offense, but primarily don't lose anybody. Don't lose any key players for any extended period of time.
Just keep it safe out there, right?
Well, you know, we want them to be ready, but we want them to be healthy on top of that. JP, good to see you,
man. Hey, what do you got today? I know I'm stalling you right now, but I don't
care. What do we have today? More Jaguar talk coming your way.
Football
right
talk.
Here. Football talk. Yes, we do. Is that,
is that new? You look kind of lonely.
I'm not lonely, but I appreciate you popping in. I got Fortunato in here. Trust me.
Oh, you're lonely, dude.
I am very lonely right now. All right, JP.
It's good to see you, Mike.
We'll see you, buddy.
Yes,
there he
sir.
Goes. JP Shadrick, ladies and gentlemen, the key man at the Metro Diner chat counter today here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. We'll open it up for your phone calls at 641-1010. We'll also hit the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line as well. Weigh in on who you think the Jags defensive MVP will be this year. A lot of people making the case for number 50 here. Mike Dempsey on a Tuesday brought to you by Kenny Lay and Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, Jaguars today continues along here. Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. We will talk with Michael Gelkin, San Diego Union Tribune, coming up at about quarter after the next hour, about 30 minutes from right now. Jags week 12 opponent, their 11th game this season, the San Diego Chargers. And after that, Gus Bradley from yesterday's show sitting down with Fat Tony and John Osier. Speaking of sitting down with Fat Tony. An unexpected appearance by Fat Tony.
Unexpected?
Well, it was. I mean, you know, you're at the, you had some HIPAA law prevents me from saying exactly what you're doing.
Yeah.
You had some medical.
I was at a doctor's office.
You had
some
medical procedure being done.
I had a follow-up appointment this morning because of the day I missed last week.
Yes.
I'm here now.
I didn't know if you would. I just figured halfway through the show you might not be coming in today. I just assumed.
I made it.
You did. Did you do your show last night out at Mandarin?
No. No, we were planning on doing the show out at Mandarin. I actually was walking up to the stadium as JP was going over the loudspeakers to let everyone know it was canceled. Like, that's when I was walking in, so
what time was that, approximately?
That was around 5.
Okay.
That was around 5.
Practice was supposed to start at 6, right?
Practice was supposed to start at 6. My show's at 7.
Right.
Me and Country. So, you know, I had a couple hours to get back over to the station, and the idea of sitting in the Manchurian High School booth doing radio for 2 hours, just looking at a football field.
The rain and the lightning.
No, thank you. You know, I'll just go to the station instead.
You and I both out like we said, we couldn't see much on Friday from our vantage point, but seemed like Mercedes Lewis made some plays, Aurelius Ben made some plays that caught people's eyes, but over the course of the weekend...
It must be a training camp if Mercedes is making plays.
Well, there's no question about that. Saturday and Sunday, I thought Allen Robinson was the standout guy on Saturday. And it's easy for wide receivers, pass catchers to stand out right now. But who other than Allen Robinson, if anyone, caught your eye this weekend?
Devon House. Honestly, I thought he looked pretty good on Saturday and Sunday when I was out there. I heard you and JP on my way in talking about Marquise Lee getting the day off because of the GPS stuff yesterday. I was locked in on Marquise on Sunday, and I talked to John Osier a little bit about this yesterday. It made me, watching how hard Marquise was working in a practice, made me realize, you know, why receivers complain about not getting the ball. Because if I was doing the kind of work that Marquise Lee was doing and seeing the ball twice in 20 reps, I'd be pretty upset too. It's a lot of effort that you put into this stuff, and he worked hard. He worked hard on Sunday, and it felt like he was getting more reps than he usually does. So I'm not surprised that he got the day off yesterday.
Catch the ball when it hits you in the hands.
Well, yeah, you got to make that play. Julius Thomas, the ball's not, it didn't go his way a lot when I was watching, but every time it did, it was caught.
He just snatched it.
Yeah, he looks good.
Nobody has a concern about him at the moment, I don't think.
Scuda, I think despite the fact that guys that are skill position guys are generally guys flashing early on in camp, I think Scuda a couple times caught my eye.
I think he did too. I think it was Saturday's practice that he might have caught my eye on some pass rushing drills.
In the 9-on-7, there was a play where Scuda blew up a guy and then made the play in the backfield. There was one of those. And I think the strong side of that defense looks like it could be pretty good with Odrick, and it looks like they finally have an auto linebacker in Scuda, which is not something that they had at all last year. I like the look of that, and I know I only saw him in the shoulder pads for a day, but man, do I like Jeremy Parnell. I really, really like the way that guy
looks.
He
looks like an NFL tackle for one thing, and boy, Luke Jokel, I hope he puts it all together this year.
Me too.
But it's fingers crossed at this point in time, because he is, look, everybody's going to get beat on occasion in one-on-one drills, but he got beat too many times for my liking in the drills I was watching this weekend. And I don't focus in solely on the offensive linemen. You know, we're all kind of moving around, and our attention gets turned from one spot to another. This morning, question of the day, we're asking who will be the Jaguars' defensive MVP on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line at 641-1010. This one from Dave. He said Jags MVP for the 2015 season will be weak side linebacker Telvin Smith. He's a playmaker, plain and simple, and Gus Bradley's defense fits his game to a T. He was playing really well the last six games of 2014, should be able to up his game in year two in the NFL making plays. He's the, by far, early leader in the clubhouse. The next text in, the Jags defensive MVP will be Telvin the Animal Smith, with about 16 exclamation points following that. So certainly a fan favorite based on just 1 year here in Jacksonville. Part of that's his personality. Part of that's the proximity where he played for a national championship team down the road. Part of that's his style of play. All those things factor into it. But he does seem to have a nose for the football. JP and I were talking about that. Ball gets tipped up. Little tip drill situation, and it's Telvin Smith.
Yeah.
You know, kind of guy on the spot right
there.
He's
around it a lot. And last year, in the time that he was on the field, Aaron Colvin was around it a lot, right? When the ball was on the ground, Aaron Colvin was there. He's just one of those guys that last year felt like he was going to be around those types of plays. You need that type of guy, right? And it's, if you feel like you have that, just call him a playmaker on defense and Telvin Smith in the linebacker core, right? It's, do you have one in the secondary too, and then developing one on that defensive line? I think Sendarek Marks to some degree is. I think they drafted Dante Fowler because they felt like he can be that kind of guy for this team. Do you have a guy in the secondary that can step up and not just be a solid NFL player, but be your playmaker in that part of your team too, in that part of the defense? Because you feel like you may have one in Telvin Smith at linebacker.
Tuesday is brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Straight ahead, we've got this date in football history and the drive around the NFL still to come. You'll hear some from Gus Bradley from his conversation yesterday with Tony and John Osier, as well as Michael Gelkin previewing the Jags' 11th opponent of the upcoming season, the San Diego Chargers. All that to come and more halfway through. It's Jaguars Today, live in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history, some significant birthdays of note on this date, August the 4th. Going back to 1949, happy 66th birthday to John Riggins, NFL running back who once told Sandra Day O'Connor, Supreme Court Justice, "Lighten up, Sandy, baby." I don't remember what the impetus was for that comment, but I think it was at a cocktail party in Washington, D.C. back in the early 80s. Of course, Riggins is the 1982 Super Bowl MVP. Had that long run on fourth and one that broke the Miami Dolphin fans' backs. I hope you're listening, Dolphin fans. It broke your backs. Okay, they still haven't won a Super Bowl, Tony, in over three decades down in South Florida. Also born on this date, a significant Jaguar from back in the early days. Happy 51st to Clyde Simmons.
Hey.
Clyde Simmons, best known in Jaguar lore for this play.
Clyde's got it at the 20. He's at the 15. He's at the 10. He's at the 5. Clyde Simmons, touchdown Jaguars.
Oh, yes. The upset of the Buffalo Bills, 30-27 back in the 96 playoffs. Followed up, of course, the next week by an identical 30-27 victory over the Denver Broncos.
You know, out at trivia on Sunday night at Cole Haynes, there was one of the guys that was playing was telling me that he actually went to that playoff game up there in Buffalo. He said it's the worst that he's ever been treated by any group of fans
in
his life. Was Buffalo during that playoff game.
What'd they do to him?
But he was wearing Jaguars gear into the stadium, and he was on his way up there. He knew it was going to be brutally cold. He stopped at some rest stop in Virginia or something like that because he didn't have any kind of anything to cover his ears when he got to the stadium. The only one they had in the rest stop that he went into was a Cowboys one. So without thinking, he's wearing Jaguars gear and a headgear of a team that had beaten the Bills twice in the Super Bowl into that stadium. He was like, "I didn't even do it intentionally to rile anyone up." But they were furious with me from the moment that I was walking towards that stadium.
I just don't understand. How would you ever go in and buy a random sports team's thing unless you were facing frostbite? I mean, honestly,
was
that the only hat available on the East Coast of the United States?
I don't know, but he said it was the only one that was where he was at, and he didn't even think about it. But having lost to them twice in the Super Bowl, the Bills fans were not happy.
Happy birthday, Big Clyde. Also born on this date, Detroit Lion running back Joik Bell. 29 years young today, told me last season the most strange pronunciation of his name he's gotten so far is Jaquiki.
Jaquiki's pretty strange.
It is pretty strange. So there you go. Joik Bell.
I hope that was on air.
Also born.
It was.
I gave him a
quick. No, you asked him on air.
I'm
saying, what's the strangest thing was on air. Like, if it was a radio host that goes, the phone, we got Jaquiki Bell.
I think that was like an autograph-seeking fan, something along
it'd
those lines.
It'd be so great if it
was. Wouldn't it be, though? Hey, Jaquiki. Click. Gotta go. This state in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, featuring the custom fit Stop Store Somnomed mouth guard. Check him out online at jamesjmccall.com or call 620-9225 to make an appointment. That is this date in football history.
Now the drive around the NFL on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Well, guys, a cool story involving a former NFL player, former NFL star Chad Ochocinco is a self-proclaimed great FIFA soccer video game player. Well, he was in Norfolk, Virginia yesterday and tweeted out, "Anybody in Norfolk want to play FIFA 15? I will come to your house and politely embarrass you on Xbox One in front of your family and friends." He had a lot of challengers, and he followed through on one of them. Actually showed up at the guy's house, and the challenger and Ochocinco split two games of FIFA, so kind of a cool gesture there by Ochocinco. New Seahawk Jimmy Graham says he's committed to blocking, and Graham realizes that with the Seahawks, blocking is a priority on par with making receptions a thing that Graham's always been good at. It's very important for me to be part of that here because about 75% of the offense here, and if you have a back like Marshawn Lynch, you want to be in there on those explosive runs. You want to be a part of that, Graham said on Monday. And finally, an anonymous tipster who raised questions about a juror in the murder trial of former New England Patriots player Aaron Hernandez had a sexually explicit relationship with him. A prosecutor said in a filing released on Monday, the day after Hernandez's fiance was seen wearing a wedding band. The lawyer for Hernandez, James Sultan, has said that the woman called him anonymously several times after Hernandez was convicted in April of first-degree murder. Sultan also said that the tipster told him she worked with the juror, and they could not confirm that. Also raised questions about whether the juror knew about a 2012 Boston double murder case in which Hernandez is also charged. So another twist there in the Aaron Hernandez murder trial.
Am I wrong, or did I read yesterday that this woman is basically obsessed with him, and when you say a sexually explicit relationship with him, she basically wrote him steamy letters, right? They didn't actually consummate the relationship, but he's been behind bars, and that she thought if he could get out, he would continue this relationship with her and take it to the next level. So she made up the story about overhearing something about a juror maybe improperly having discussions about that. At least that's what I saw yesterday. I don't know how you prove any of it, but I don't understand these women, Tony. They like the bad boys. Well, my goodness, he's a murderer. He's going to kill you if he gets mad at you.
Yeah.
Not a good thing.
No, it's definitely not a good thing, but to each their own, I guess. I don't have to understand it.
Yeah, the one chick wanted to marry Charles Manson. You saw that, but
yeah.
In the end, she wanted basically the rights to his story. She wanted to be able to write a book about it, like, I married Charles Manson.
Right.
And because it's not like, what are you going to do? They're not going to give Charles Manson a conjugal visit. I don't think you have to worry about it proceeding to that stage.
I hope not.
If you're his betrothed. By the way, you remember Kyrie Irving doing the Uncle Drew character, right?
Yeah.
Love that. Do you see Cristiano Ronaldo, what he did?
No.
I don't know if it was... where is he from? Brazil? Is he Brazilian?
He's Portuguese.
Portuguese? Okay. Yeah. I don't know if it was where it was, what country it was in, but he went to the town square, right? And he got dressed. I had a bodysuit to put on, probably 40, 50 pounds. Didn't look like a big fat slob, but just looked like a huskier guy.
Mm-hmm.
Put on a wig, kind of like something. Picture some groovy, open-collared dude from the 70s.
Right.
Okay. He's got kind of the long hair. He had these sunglasses on, these like reddish tint sunglasses, and he goes out there with a soccer ball and he just starts dribbling around, and you can imagine he's very good at that, right?
Sure.
Quick, and people are coming by, and it's a soccer playing country, and he's trying to get him to steal the ball from him, and everyone's like, who is this dumpy looking dude with the mad skills, you know? And a couple of guys out there are like, yeah, I can juggle this ball, and he's like, oh, that's pretty impressive, and he gets it back, and he, you know, of course does it 10 times better. So he's playing around with this little kid, and he grabs the ball and starts to sign it to this kid. He's still in costume, and then he starts to rip off the mask and the hair and all the stuff. And it was just really an awkward thing. You'd think like the kid would get all wide-eyed and go, oh, it's Ronaldo. And the kid goes, hello? and other people were like, oh, ooh, ooh. And so I think Ronaldo expected the kid to give him a hug, you know,
yeah,
like be overwhelmed. And so he awkwardly hugged the kid when the kid was just kind of standing there. It was,
mm-hmm,
it ended up being a little creepy, I thought, actually.
That is a little awkward.
It's a cool concept. I like the idea. You go,
sure,
out there, and one woman walks by, and he's like, hey, can I get your number? She's like, no way. yeah.
What opportunity you just blew, lady.
Don't judge a book by its cover there.
You got no idea. I've heard a couple of Ronaldo stories. I know he was being interviewed. He got asked about FIFA. He told the guys, I don't give a boop, and walked off the set of an interview.
He did do that, yes.
And he also recently rented a Greek island for one of his good friends for his birthday party.
What does that go for these days?
I don't know. Just rented an island.
I'd do that.
Yeah.
I mean, the kind of money that guy, he makes, he's one of the highest paid athletes in the world, right?
No
he's
doubt.
Usually like a top five paid athlete in the world,
yeah,
every year. So he's probably taking in tens of millions, if not pushing maybe $100 million. I don't remember, you know, the Forbes list always comes
probably
out.
Probably more than that.
Any year Mayweather fights, he's the highest, yeah, paid athlete because he gets ridiculous pay-per-views. And then usually there are a couple of golfers up there, Mickelson and Woods, because of all the endorsements that go along. It's not the on-course. I think Woods biggest year is around $10 million, something like that, which is great. I mean, it's great.
Nuts. Yeah.
But, you know, he makes another 90 to 100 million in endorsements, or at least he did at his peak. Yeah. He got that kind of money, man. He'd do a lot of crazy things.
Sure.
Including renting a Greek island.
Oh, it wasn't just rent. He actually bought the guy an island.
Oh, he bought the island for him.
Jeez.
Did it have a price tag on that?
Yeah, what I have it right here. For? It says anywhere. This is a huge gap, by the way. It says anywhere between $3.28 million and $54.8 million.
That is,
that's cool.
Even so, hey, dude, my good friend, here's a $3 million right. island I bought you.
Right Happy there. Birthday.
Happy birthday. What? That's weird. I mean, there you go. An island. All right. We'll take it. All right. Coming up, we'll talk with Michael Gelkin, San Diego Union Tribune, and we'll preview the Chargers. You know, I wonder if at all their preparations are impacted. Are they getting questions on a regular basis about, hey, are you guys moving? What's the impact on you? Phillip Rivers still without a contract extension. Right now looks like he's content to play out the final year of his deal in San Diego. They drafted Melvin Gordon in the first round this year. A lot of people think they're going to challenge Denver as much because Denver may be coming a little bit back to the pack as anything, but we'll get into it. The Jags have not fared well against the Chargers in recent vintage.
Nope.
That's an understatement right there. They'll get them in Week 12, the 11th game of the season. We'll get down to the bottom of it with Michael Gelkin from the Union Tribune. And then after that, you'll hear some of what Gus Bradley had to say, some of the highlights of Tony and John Osher's conversation with him yesterday here on Jaguars Today. Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lay and Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. With that, Tony, with Tyler Devitt, I'm Mike Dempsey, Jaguars. Today continues in a moment on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Michael Gelkin didn't realize there was going to be breakfast served today. The Metro Diner chat counter. Welcome in. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars Today. Gus Bradley, his thoughts from Tony and John Osher's conversation with him yesterday. Coming up in about 20 minutes, we've been week by week for the last 5 weeks, going through two teams on the Jags schedule in the order of appearance in the 2015 season. And next up, the San Diego Chargers, who will take on the Jaguars November 29th, week 12 of the season here in Jacksonville. Michael Gelkin of the San Diego Union Tribune joins us. Good morning, Michael. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Good morning. How are you?
We're good. Hey, Michael, before we get to the on-field stuff, let me ask you, from your perspective, from what you can tell, is there any effect on the players or coaching staff or preparation with all the stories swirling about the uncertainty of where the Chargers will ultimately be playing next year?
Well, honestly, these guys are human, and like as if you're going into a contract year, you don't know where you're going to be living the next year after this upcoming season. You don't know where you're going to sign, if you're going to be re-signed. There's uncertainty there. So I think it's kind of like everyone here in San Diego or with the Chargers, it's kind of like in a contract year. You don't know if you're going to be in San Diego. You could be up the road in Los Angeles. And then on top of that, some guys actually aren't a contract year. But the one commonality that Chargers players and coaches and executives in the front office and fans have, which is that we don't know. No one can say for certain right now whether or not the Chargers will be playing in San Diego next year, but all you can do is control the present and try to make the best out of what definitely will be a 2015 season here in San Diego.
I'm sure you talk to your cohorts out there. What is the educated guess right now? I mean, what does your gut tell you? Do you think they're long for San Diego, or is it impossible to tell?
It's pretty darn impossible to tell with certainty. I think if anyone's speaking with certainty on the subject, either they're way above my pay grade or they're mistaken, because it's so hard to predict how this thing's going to go down. But if you're trying to be optimistic about what's happening in San Diego on the stadium front, I think it's difficult. It's probably a little easier today than it was a couple months ago with all the work that the city of San Diego is doing to get something done on a local level. However, everything that they do is being undercut and really just ridden by the Chargers. The point man on Alpine Stadium just really is undercutting and questioning the, you know, just whether or not the city of San Diego has their ducks in order. Everything's being undercut by the Chargers for the city, which makes it hard to be too optimistic given that it takes two to tango when it comes to building a new stadium.
Sure, and you talk about the uncertainty surrounding this team just with where they're going to play next year. Well, maybe they're leaders on the offensive and defensive side. They're not sure if they're going to be back beyond this year either. Phillip Rivers and Eric Weddle, a lot of stories about those guys in the offseason. You talk about the potential distraction of Los Angeles in the future for this team. Is there any distraction with both of those guys with the positions that they have within this team and this roster, that locker room?
The thing about both those guys, Phillip Rivers at quarterback, Eric Weddle at safety, they are rare when it comes to just who they are as people. And I've been around them enough now, going on my sixth year, where I feel comfortable saying that. You know, not always you know who guys are outside of a locker room, but I've spent enough time with both of them to confidently say they are not going to allow their contract situations to distract them from this season. I know Eric, you know, their situations are a little bit different. The Chargers are working actively right now to get something done with Phil Rivers before the August 13 preseason game. If they don't get something done by that exhibition opener, talks will be tabled until next year. So we're going to find out very soon what's to come on Rivers' contract front. With Weddle, the Chargers have shown no desire to get something done this year. And if they're indeed to revisit next year, Weddle has made it clear that that's too late. And so right now, Weddle is pretty confident that this is going to be his final season in San Diego with the Chargers. So, it likely will be their final training camp together, is what's going on right now at Chargers Park. But both of them are such pros about it that they're not going to let it affect their play or who they are as leaders, who they are around the building, on the field, in any sort of negative fashion.
Michael Gelkin here with the San Diego Union Tribune. Michael, for years now, Antonio Gates has been the safety blanket, so to speak, for Phillip Rivers, his favorite target out there now. Suspended for the first four games of the season for a violation of the policy against performance-enhancing drugs. Are they well-suited to fill in for him with Ladarius Green? How's he coming along, and how big of an impact will the loss of Gates be in the first month?
Yeah, it's funny because the failed test for PEDs, I'm told, happened in April, but when the Chargers actually found out about it was in July, kind of around the time we all did. So they didn't prepare for it in terms of this offseason, but they do feel prepared because of Ladarius Green. He's going into his fourth year as a tight end. Antonio Gates regularly, I've heard him refer to Ladarius as his younger brother. He feels like the big brother in their relationship in that tight end room. Very close knit with Gates, having spent years developing him and really topping him up as being a rising star in this league. Whether or not he is, well, we'll probably have a better feel for after the first 4 weeks of the season. But the Chargers are going to rely on a number of guys to get through when Gates is out, because you can't just put somebody in at tight end and expect him to do the same things that Gates does. So Darius Green, you know, he's a tall, speedy guy compared to Antonio Gates. At 35, is very nuanced in his route running. He's just a real expert when it comes to route running and has great chemistry with Phil. Just totally different players. So it's going to take a group to do it. Stevie Johnson, a wide receiver the Chargers are quickly falling in love with here in camp. He's been a really nice addition for them after they lost Eddie Royal. Danny Woodhead, a running back, comes back off of a broken fibula. Everyone's just pretty upbeat right now with this offense, and it's not just because of Ladarius Green. They think that they can get by with other weapons, and also the run game.
Looking at the run game, obviously Melvin Gordon coming in the first round for the San Diego Chargers. How has he looked through the offseason going into the early part of camp for San Diego? And you mentioned Danny Woodhead. Is the expectation for him, after missing most of last year, to come back in and play the same role that he had 2 years ago as kind of that third down back, more of a receiver out of the backfield for San Diego this year?
Sure. And I'll start with Melvin Gordon. He's a rookie, first of all, and I think everyone should be fair to realize what he's going through right now at training camp. It is very fast at this level, and especially in the passing game and pass protection, you know, it's coming along, and it's really encouraging because this guy works hard. He has a great attitude. He's smart, and then when he runs the football, great vision and instincts, and, you know, kind of the way Gates is nuanced. I heard Frank Reich, the offensive coordinator, say that Melvin Gordon is kind of nuanced as a running back in a similar fashion. He just kind of does some things that great players instinctively do. So there's a lot of positive qualities, but he's just still getting his feet wet with the NFL game speed and the playbook and all that. So I don't think anyone should expect Melvin Gordon to have a really substantial role in the passing game. Certainly he'll be asked to protect here and there, but the Chargers have Danny Woodhead. They have Donald Brown. They have Brandon Oliver. All those guys are going to be involved. And on the topic of Woodhead, he's going to do pretty much what he did before his broken leg that he suffered on the first play of week three. The Chargers missed him for essentially 14 games last year. He looks like right now, like he never left. And so kind of, it'll probably be a little similar this year in terms of how the Chargers split their backfield as if Ryan Matthews was still here. Matthews didn't do a ton in the 2-minute offense. He didn't do a bunch on third down. That'll probably be the case again this year with how the Chargers handle Melvin Gordon's workload. And that's a luxury. You have a running back do what he does best and keep his confidence at a high level.
Let's take a look at the defensive side of the football, Michael. Obviously, Manti Te'o came in with great fanfare for off-the-field reasons as well as his play on the field a couple of seasons ago. But I really thought that he started to play well in the second half of last year. Where is he in his development as an NFL player?
He's far along now as he's ever been in the NFL, which is what you want to see out of a player going into his third season. He's really been limited his first couple seasons by foot injuries. It kind of just kept popping up, and the Chargers hoping that it popped up for the last time. No one really knows for sure, but they know when it comes to controlling what's controllable, mastering what you can control, Manti is fantastic. I know he has a lot of it. He obviously had a larger or brighter spotlight on him than most rookies did when he entered the league a couple years ago, but all he's done has been a pro. He's really gelled with teammates really well. He works hard. He takes care of his body. Fun guy, and he's really becoming a really smart leader to the middle of the Chargers' defense. So they're very happy with what Manti Te'o has shown. He had his first career interception last December against Tom Brady here at Qualcomm Stadium. It was intended for Rob Gronkowski, and Manti made a play on the ball. And I think from that moment on, we've seen the lights really come on. And Manti, he feels like that was a huge moment in his career, and that momentum that he carried from that moment has really continued into this offseason.
Last year, you look at that San Diego defense, they were really good against the pass and pretty bad against the run. What did they do this offseason to try to fix some of those problems they had stopping opposing running games?
Well, for your Florida listeners, they should appreciate this one, at least the ones who are Hurricanes fans. Denzel Perryman, second round pick, inside linebacker, turn his film. He's just a total thumper. Guy loves to hit. And the Chargers have been pretty pleased with it. It only took 2 days in pads for the head coach, Mike McCoy, to single out unprompted what Denzel has brought in terms of taking on lead blocks and just being physical in practice. That's what the Chargers are excited about with him. That's what they're hoping and expect will carry over into the regular season. So it's there wasn't a ton the Chargers did on defensive line other than improving some depth here and there, and actually lost a guy for the season, a backup defensive end a couple days ago, which doesn't help. But linebacker, inside linebacker, getting some guys healthy, and also with the addition of the second-round pick, Denzel Perryman out of Miami, they hope that they'll be better in that area.
What happened to Donald Butler, Michael? A couple of years ago, it looked like an ascending star, and now, the guys we're talking about here, Manti Te'o and Perryman, catching coaches' attention. You're not going to play all these inside linebackers at the same time. What happened to Butler's career?
Yeah, it's a tough one. Butler, he didn't take last year what happened really well. There was one column that was written about him, one in which, he was interviewed beforehand and he knew the premise. And I didn't write it, my colleague did. And ever since that happened, he stopped talking to our newspaper. So I probably want to be better off explaining Donald Butler what's been going on through his head than I can, just because he's been so shut down ever since the struggles, day in detention, and they started reducing his playing time. And he really kind of shut down from a mental place in terms of how he was around the media here in San Diego. But I think the best way, because I thought about it a lot, it wasn't because he was hurt that he struggled last year after signing a big contract months earlier. It wasn't because of injuries. It might have been because I think there's two people in this world when something big happens to them in their career, like it be it a promotion or a raise what have you. I think first and one, when they get that opportunity, that pay raise or that new position, they celebrate. They maybe go on a trip. They buy something nice. They have a big dinner or party, and they just live it up. Then there's a second person who the very thought of celebrating makes them sick because that's time wasted because they could be spending on proving the person who gave them that opportunity, that raise, right, proving them right, and just, you know, wanting and just being incensed with this idea of showing that you were worth the person taking that chance on you. And I know, you know, I think Butler was probably a little bit on that first one. I think he probably handled his offseason a little bit differently. I think days after he signed that, he went tropical. I mean, he just, I don't know, but I think it was a down year, and I'll tell you what, in camp, in spring, this year, he looks like a totally different guy. He's lost a bunch of weight. Teammates are really talking him up, and it's genuine. Same thing with the coaches. Everyone at the Chargers Park is extremely encouraged with what Butler is doing now, a year removed from that contract extension.
Oh, that's right. I mean, they're going to have some quality depth to run at teams in that linebacking core this year. Michael Gelkin, San Diego Union Tribune here with us. Michael, we'll wrap up with this. 9-7 last year found them tied with Kansas City, three games behind Denver. A lot of people think Denver, for a variety of reasons, may be coming back to the pack a little bit. Do you think San Diego has enough to get into the postseason this year?
I do. And I think, like with all these teams, you know, and actually the Broncos have probably been hit the hardest. Injuries, I think, are what often will determine what a roster looks like. But, you know, when it comes to when games are being played, I mean, we're still a month out of the season. But right now, as the Chargers roster stands, you know, they have the quarterback in Phillip Rivers. They expect to have more balance on offense with the first-round pick, Melvin Gordon. You know, there's some youth on defense, some energy. Guys are healthy. Guys are flying around. Jason Verrett is the best player that nobody knows about yet, but they will. Cornerback who the Chargers took in the first round last year. I'm hearing Darrell Revis comparisons by some in the locker room. And it sounds crazy because he's only going into his second year. And I think to a certain degree, it probably needs to be pulled back a little bit. But this guy has the potential to be elite, and there's no doubt about it. So there's a lot of energy and excitement right now. And I think you have a reason to buy in when they have the franchise quarterback that they do.
All right, Michael Gelkin, you can follow him on Twitter at UTGelkin. Gelkin spelled GEHLKEN, just like it sounds. Michael, we always appreciate the time, and we'll see you in November here on the First Coast of Florida. Thanks for taking a few minutes with us.
My pleasure. See you guys then.
All right, you got it, man. There you go. The 11th opponent this season for the Jags, and they haven't duplicated any at this point, Tony. So all those divisional games backlogged in the end of the season. They've got, of course, the Texans in Week 17 and the Titans and the Colts in Week 13 and 14, respectively. So the Chargers, we've already heard from the Titans and the Colts. So the Falcons, one of the few remaining teams on this schedule we haven't talked about, and we'll have D. Orlando Ledbetter from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution joining us on Friday to do just that. That'll lead the New Orleans Saints, the Week 16 opponent, and will hit all of the Jaguars' 2015 opponents on their schedule. Michael Gelkin, we appreciate him stopping by the Metro Diner chat counter. Coming up next, we'll hear from Gus Bradley, some of his key points he made yesterday in talking with Tony and John Osier here on Jaguars Today. That's straight ahead, plus the fan feedback question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. Who will be the defensive MVP of your Jacksonville Jaguars in 2015? We'll share thoughts on that coming up next on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, we roll along. Tuesdays brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, divorcemenonly.com. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony. But are you caught up on True Detective? You haven't even started this season.
Season 2, I have not watched any of it.
Any of it, huh?
None. I told you, with season 1, I wasn't watching when it was on. It was binge week.
From about the halfway point of the 4th episode till now, I think it's been pretty good. One episode to go, 90-minute finale.
Yeah, I'll see it eventually.
Rachel McAdams is a fetching young lassie.
She is. She's an attractive lady.
Not an ugly young lady in any stretch of the imagination. Maybe, nah, never mind. Why even go there? It was a comment that didn't need to be made, and one of the rare times I put the governor on my mouth, Tony. Zipped it right up. So I'm all caught up on everything. I've got Sunday nights right now. I'm glad there's no Sunday night football at the moment, because I've got back to back to back to back is what I've got. The last ship, followed by the strain. The last ship, by the way, which has been like floating around off the coast of Jacksonville for like the last 2 weeks. By the way, Jacksonville and St. Augustine have been getting a lot of love on the last ship. The last ship, the strain. Then I watched a replay of Humans. Have you watched that show, Humans?
No.
You know, it's not the worst thing in the world. It's not the best.
Right.
And then I'll watch a replay of True Detective. I call it the quadfecta, the Sunday night quadfecta.
That's a lot.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. I'm out.
Keeps me up late on Sunday nights.
I'm out doing trivia on Sundays. If I get home in time to watch Rick and Morty, that's the only thing I watch on Sunday nights.
I don't know Rick and Morty.
It's an Adult Swim.
That's what I thought it was. Cartoon. Where do they come from, though?
It's kind of like a demented Back to the Future type show. Like, it's got an old crazy grandfather who's taking his grandson around on all these adventures, and it's a sci-fi show. Honestly, I think it's the smartest sci-fi show on TV. It just happens to be on Adult Swim.
It's not Uncle Grandpa that you're talking
about. No, it's definitely not Uncle Grandpa.
Okay. I like Uncle Grandpa.
I know you do.
He's hilarious.
It's Rick and Morty.
All right, you had Gus Bradley on yesterday.
We did.
And really, this is as fresh as just about anything, because, you know, 45 minutes of
what much?
You know, wait around, get on the field. Probably a very unsatisfying portion of practice last night overall. So good to hear from Gus yesterday. Glad he was able to stop by and give us some time here on Jaguars Today. You and John Osier sat down with him, and he said from what he's seen through the first 3 days, this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, he's reacting to that he had been pleased with the offense up to that point.
Very pleased with our guys. You know, I mentioned it before, like a guy like Blake Bortles, he really wanted to own the offense. And you could tell that he put his time in that period of time to study the offense and have a better idea of what's expected of him.
You know, you get the, when you ask a question every now and then, you get somebody to say, that's a great question. That was one of those. I got one of those from Gus Bradley yesterday. It made me feel pretty good about myself.
That's a great question.
Yeah, because I had asked, you know, if he thought the offense is where he wanted it to be coming out of the offseason and into the training camp. And he was like, that's a great one. I was like, yes, I got it. I got a good one. He also went on to talk about the offensive line, wide receivers, putting in that extra work out there.
Blake's not the only one. You see offensive linemen, receivers. You know, they went and worked out together over at Bishop Kenny High School. Just those things like that, I think, are, you know, gives you great confidence that these guys are really competing hard to understand the nuances of the offense.
You know, one of the overlooked guys, I don't want to say completely forgotten, but overlooked guys, and a guy who looked at this point last year like he was going to be a big part of the offense, Clay Harbor. I mean, remember that? Remember he got hurt at the practice at Bartram Trail?
Yep, the move tight end.
Yes, but prior to that, Tony, he had some practices where he was clearly the standout guy among skill position guys.
Yeah, he's been good early again.
When Gus talks about the extra work, I saw he and Ben Koyak, the seventh-round tight end, and there may have been one or two others in there, but I didn't catch all their numbers, so don't presume these are the only ones doing it. But right after practice, and they had a long practice on Sunday, they went the full distance. They didn't cut that thing short. It was, I'd say, about 2 hours and 15 minutes is what it seemed like with stretching and everything included. Right to the jugs gun. And catching pass after pass after pass after pass, just working on their hands. So, you know, Harbor's a nice player. You start to look at the skill guys now. And they got Julius Thomas and Harbor and Mercedes. Yep. And, you know, they've got the young wide receivers that we talk so much about. Rashad Green looks faster in person, I think, than he does on film. And then you look at T.J. Yeldon, but then you see a healthy Denard, a healthy Toby Gerhardt out there, and you say, wow, this is the best collection of potential talent that they've had at the skill positions in a while. So good to see those guys getting the extra work in as we continue some thoughts from Gus Bradley. And we talked about this earlier when J.P. Shattuck was in here. They want to establish a tone. The way you do that is with the running game.
We've got to be able to run the ball, but it doesn't mean we're running the ball 50 times a game. It just, you know, where we can establish it, run when they know we're going to run. You know, those types of situations where our offensive line and running backs and the whole team has great confidence in it.
Impose your will.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of questions about what the offensive philosophy this team is going to be, right? We had talked to Jed Fish a handful of times last year going into the season by this point, and he had given us, you know, numbers 55-45 as far as running the ball, that kind of thing. We haven't heard that kind of talk yet this offseason. So what does Olsen's offense look like here in Jacksonville? Gus also talked about the emphasis from last year to this year to try to improve what they're doing in that run game as well.
We knew, you know, that we wanted to establish the run last year, mm-hmm. too. And sometimes it just takes time with the continuity of the offensive line. And, you know, we were still at times figuring out who the starting offensive linemen were early in the season, where, you know, it's tough to build that continuity. But, you know, that's what I told them now. You know, now, you know, when you had to, some changes on the offensive mm-hmm. side, you know, Doug Marone's skill set, you know, as a coach, very good with running the ball, very good in protections. Greg Olson, you know, does a great job with protections, and he's convicted to run the ball along with the other offensive staff members. So I just think there's a stronger sense from the staff now of what we're trying to get accomplished, and it's real, and the players are feeling that.
You know, they do want to run it, obviously, and one thing Gus said after practice was, you know, one of those things you want to move the football on the ground, suppose you will, but you also want to limit turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, I brought this up with JP. JP thinks, knowing Blake a little bit, that this is not going to be an issue with his personality. You don't want to make that too big of a point of emphasis, right? You don't want to turn it over, but you don't want to inhibit top end playmaking, and sometimes that requires taking chances and sticking the ball in there. You know, everyone's talking
sure.
about Mariota hasn't thrown an interception in 4 days of Titans camp so far. And that's great. Tell me how many plays he's making. Maybe he is, because he was highly productive in college, over 40 touchdowns, and I want to say, what, less than 5 interceptions last year? Might have had 4 picks the
Something
whole year.
Something like that, yeah.
I mean, so he's shown that at the collegiate level, but, you know, will he be able to take that efficiency and also still have the top-end
sure.
production?
And that was in an offense that completely overmatched opponents.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Gus, on the running backs in particular, and what he thinks they bring to this year's table.
I think they're very versatile. You've got different, you know, Toby Gerhart's different than Denard Robinson in their running styles. And I know, as a defensive coach, we would always look at the running backs and we would show our players different running styles. You know, if this guy's in the game, this is what you can expect. Well, if it's, you know, they have the same running styles, it's not too hard. You kind of, you know, you're ready for it. But when you have different running styles and different plays that go with that, it makes it more challenging. And that's what I like about our group. Guys like TJ Yeldon, you know, kind of a combination of both. And, you know, Bernard Pierce and Storm, you're right. All these guys, they have so many attributes that, we just need to see it play out, need to put the pads on. I do know Toby Gerhart has really shown flashes this year, versus last year at this time. And I think it's the style of runs that we have. You're seeing more downhill types of runs, and it probably suits his personality a little bit more. Same with Bernard.
Yeah, and it's good to hear with Toby Gerhart. We talked about it last year once we got into the season. That stretch play is not who Toby is. Like, it's not what he is. He is a downhill between the tackles guy, and it seems like that's the position they're going to put him in this season when he gets the ball, and that's one that he should be much more comfortable with. Also asked Gus Bradley about the defensive backfield and some of the guys that have stood out early on in camp.
I think, you know, a couple of guys, you know, Demetrius McCray has just been very solid. With House, I think he's made some plays for us, and he does have a pretty good understanding. I think he's still learning some of the nuances of it, but we hope that those flashes show up even more. Aaron Colvin, I mean, this is a challenge now. He's playing outside and the nickel, and you know, that's just difficult. Remember Will Blackman last year played a nickel spot, and that's really had him locked into. I remember a guy like Rondé Barber. You know, a guy that played outside and then in 3 wideouts came in and moved inside. And, you know, he wasn't even active for 14 games his rookie year. You know, it's a challenging task where Aaron Colvin has really embraced it, really, really competitive at the nickel spot and doing a good job on the outside too. So, you know, guys like that with Grotz and, you know, so much competition taking place there. You're right, we've got some difficult decisions with that group as well.
That's good decisions, though, not difficult in the sense that we can't find enough guys to man the spots. We may have too many for the spots we have, and you'll take that problem every time. There's a lot more to that interview that you didn't hear there, and we encourage you to go to 1010XL.com and go to the on-demand section. It's a 13-minute interview with Tony and John Osier sitting down with the head coach, Gus Bradley, yesterday on Jaguars Today. Today, we asked you who would be your leading candidate for defensive MVP this year. Considering Cindric Marks coming off a torn ACL, it's going to be difficult to repeat his outstanding season from last
year.
Yep. I would expect, right? So I kind of removed him from the thought process, Tony.
Telvin Smith was the first guy I thought of. I did, my mind went to Aaron Colvin. I could see a lot of different guys. I could see, you know, Branch is getting some love here. It could be a surprise guy like that. I think Andre Branch is a guy that...
It's funny. You know, Branch and Mercedes Lewis, every time I ever watch him practice, I'm like, whoa.
Why don't they do more?
Right. It's just that they look the part so much, and it's whatever that translation is to the field. And I'm not saying Mercedes Lewis hasn't had a bad career in the NFL. He's had a fine career in the NFL. He's an okay football player. He's been fine here with the Jacksonville Jaguars, but never quite what you expect a guy like with that athleticism to be at this level. And Andre Branch is kind of the same thing. He's fine. He's not bad. Andre Branch isn't a bad player. He hasn't taken that step that you keep waiting on him to take, and it looks like he can because the athleticism, he's a freak. He's an absolute freak. It hasn't translated for him yet.
By the way, the voting, a runaway for number 50, but give us a sampling of what some of the folks had to say about this.
Here's what we got from Irish Jaguar. If I keep saying sip, it will be true eventually. Yes, you can keep saying it. From Daniel, Telvin Smith will lead the Jaguars in tackles. From Eric, I'll go on a limb and say Telvin Smith, make a bunch of plays, and he'll be hard to ignore. From Cristiano, Aaron Colvin. From Jimbo, Telvin. From Joey, Colvin. He can play all three downs and make big plays. What a steal in the fourth round. From Demetrius, Scuda. I believe there could be multiple candidates, but as rushing and coverage linebacker, he could make the most impact. From Mike, Telvin Smith. Jags need to be selling this guy's jersey. From Black Dog Express, defensive MVP, I like Telvin the Tasmanian Devil Smith. From Adam, I'm going with Puz. He's the rock in the middle of the D, in for a big year coming off injury. From Chris, I know everyone is saying it, but Telvin Smith, I think Aaron Colvin is a close second. From Matthew, Jared Audrick, and it's a lock. From Jason, the defensive MVP will be Pete Prisco. He's defensive every time you disagree with his opinions. From Teal-pocalypse, Scuda and Telvin Smith should be easy choices. I'll go with Hauser Sample to make some heads turn. From Dino, easy one. Telvin Smith, he will be a Pro Bowler this year.
Oh, heads are turning all across the First Coast after that. You didn't get this one sent to you, but Duval Doom went with this one. Easy. It's O'Halloran because he's easily the most defensive one out there. And we would direct you to the Jaguars.com video of... the post-practice presser with Gus yesterday to fill in the dots on that. By the way, if Puzlesny is healthy, there's no way to help Telvin Smith is leading the team in tackles.
No.
Okay.
And honestly,
Big plays, maybe.
I like Puz for this answer, honestly. I think that there's a potential, and again, it's something Ozier and I talked about a lot yesterday. There's a potential with Audrick and Scuda for that strong side to be really good this year of that defense and force a lot of action back towards Puzlesny. He's a guy that could have a monster year as far as tackles for this team. I don't expect him to make as many big plays necessarily as a guy like Telvin Smith because, as we've talked about today already, he finds a way to be around the ball a lot, but I like Puz for this.
Well, and I will say a final nitpicky thought. Telvin may have been a steal in the fourth round. The fact that they got him in the fifth round is even better. Even more of a
crazy.
They love him some number 50.
It's the seminal round.
In these parts right here. I guess it is, right? The Rashad Green, Telvin Smith, the back-to-back years go in that direction. Thanks for everybody who weighed in on that one. And thanks to Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com, our Tuesday presenting sponsor of Jaguars Today. Appreciate Michael Gelkin from the San Diego Union Tribune stopping by to preview the Chargers. They'll face the Jags late November here in Jacksonville. And J.P. Shadrick. Jaguars.com, Jaguars Monday, Jaguars Thursday, and Jags pre- and post-game host as well. Shadrick sighting on the program today. So appreciate him stopping by. That'll do it for us. We'll say hello to primetime coming up for Joe Fortunato, for Tyler Devitt, for Fat Tony. Half of Fat Tony is better than none of Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. That does it for Jaguars Today. Primetime coming up next here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Rick Flip.